One other thing that's going on this week is there was another very interesting report from our friends over at Gomez. They were looking at their routine surveys on web traffic and activity, and in one of the surveys they came up with some fascinating material looking at how dissatisfied customers online with a particular site are not only going to leave that site and go on to another, which is well established, but that they are also going to directly, in at least one-fourth of the cases, go back and punish the physical store. In other words, they are not going to go to the brick-and-mortar location of that same area, so it really could have substantial brand contamination. Jessica Bryan from Gomez, can you give us a rundown of why that's going on?
There's big money on the table now. It's the holiday time. Patty's recent research projected that $32 billion will be spent online this holiday season. And 9 out of the 10 online shoppers we polled plan to do the majority of their holiday shopping online. So Evan mentioned one of the top three things that we found. And for online shoppers, the retail brand transcends the channel. When they have a poor web experience, as in slow page loads, unsuccessful transactions, they not only abandoned the website, but over half would said that they would stop or reconsider shopping at the company's brick-and-mortar location. That was very surprising to us. The majority of online shoppers blame the retailer when they can't complete an online purchase. The average online shopper doesn't understand the complexity behind delivering an optimal web experience. Websites today have a lot of moving parts, all of which are not under the retailer's direct control. I mean, anything from third-party content, external hosting. But the bottom line is that the customer associates the brand and the online experience.
This has been coming for a number of years. Way back even when I was with AMR, I think in 2003, we did a holiday shopping study and found that 20% of consumers were unsatisfied with their experience and they weren't going to go back.
What year was that?
2003, I believe, or
okay,
two.
Yeah.
And so 2002, end of holiday season 2002. So it's not all that surprising to me. What was starting to become apparent then was that consumers had a real interest in buying online, picking up in store. Now, if you lose your trust on the online side, of course you're going to lose the trust that it's going to be in the store when you go there as well. And retailers have had a very hard time, and I tend to do these studies once a year, much like Jupiter does in a slightly different vein. Retailers have been very slow to understand that to the consumer it's one brand.
It's one brand, right.
It's one brand, and the fact that it's different channels is something that they want to be totally transparent to them. They're not structured for it. They're not compensated correctly for it. And in many ways, their systems aren't set up. Their technology infrastructure isn't set up to accommodate that.
This certainly shined the light on that very topic, absolutely.
Brings up a very important point is even at the advent of online or the advent of catalogs, even of any kind of new channel, consumers haven't split the expectations they have of the brand. They are shopping with Macy's or Bloomingdale's or JCPenney or Sears, regardless of whether they're on the phone with you from a catalog or they're in a store or they're on a website. And that has always been true. And so a bad store experience to the same extent will also negatively impact customers' propensity to shop in other channels. So this is not a one-way street. It is a very good point that Jessica and Paula are making, but let's also be clear that it is kind of a full circle kind of issue. And consumers have very high expectations of consistency across channels. And it's not just that I see the same merchandise or I see the same ad across channels. It's that the service is the same, that I can return a product in the store that I buy online or vice versa, that the store people know what's going on online. In most cases, because of the very good point that Paula is making of why this hasn't happened yet, retailers are on a very slow path to embracing this, though they philosophically understand it and philosophically want to be there. It's very expensive to change those systems, to change their operating programs, to change their compensation packages in a way that really significantly is going to impact the way they do business.
It's particularly bad for companies like Nordstrom's that pride themselves in their in-store experience and dedication to customer service. That is very difficult to replicate online to give that kind of personal attention and dedication to customer service more so than other places. So what you end up with is customers being dissatisfied with the online experience. carrying that forward to the in-store experience?
Well, the opportunity might be to not exactly replicate that experience, but create its own unique experience online. And we do plan over the Thanksgiving holiday to send out another survey to kind of gauge more information on that, like what customers are expecting online versus in the store. So again, maybe the answer is not to replicate it, but to create its own unique experience.
Well, I think where retailers are going now is in that, along that path, and what the ones that are sort of progressive and really kind of get it are doing is they're basically saying, okay, we've got three channels maybe, you know, predominantly in our business, right? They each have specific qualities or features that they do really, really well that the other ones don't necessarily do well. The in-store experience being one, to Mark's point. The online research being another. Merchandising within a catalog or the mobility of a catalog. Those types of things. And optimizing each of the channels to make sure that those things are as well presented as possible, but also then managing their merchandising assortment and strategies to optimize cross-channel behavior. So, for example, you have $2, $5 onesies for little kids. Well, you're not really going to cost-effectively be shipping one or two of those out of your warehouse from online, so you may not want to feature those online, but in-store, they're a great opportunity. Whereas in-store, you don't have room to display 10 or 12 or 15 different strollers, but online, you can display as many as you can hold in the warehouse. So these kinds of sort of cross-channel optimization is really where retailers are going. It's going to take a long time, again, back to Paula's point of all those inhibitors, before they actually really get there and understand what the consumer's reaction to all this is going to be. But that's really, I think, where the smartest retailers are going.
Well, let's put it in perspective. What was the quote that you expected the spend to be, $36 billion?
32, yeah.
Now, that's on a total retail spend of 1.9 or 2 trillion. So it's still not a lot of money, right? It sounds like a lot of money.
Yeah, it's about 6% of total holiday sales.
Okay.
And 5% of total annual sales. So it's very small, but for any given retailer, it's a really big number.
For some retailers, it's a big number, but it's hard. If it's 6% of your business, it becomes hard, I think, for these guys to put in the kind of money they need to put in to create the right online experience.
Well, and that's
growing, right?
Yeah, you know, of course, it's been the fastest growing component of most retailers' business, but that is one of the biggest inhibitors, you know, Paula, for them to have been fixing some of these things that you rightly point out, is it going to cost them a lot to change those systems or their POS systems, for example, so that they can be more multi-channel organized. And how much incremental revenue am I actually going to make for that investment is a really strong debate that's happening in many of the boardrooms across the country.
One of the things that was interesting is that this morning the National Retail Federation issued one of its own surveys on customer service, and the top retailer was Amazon. And the thing that is interesting is that it's obviously an online-only site, and the only reason they could give such good customer service is because they are an online-only site.
Right.
It was an interesting, I didn't expect to see them as number one, but it does make sense in hindsight. And then when you flip that over to the point that Mark was making, that when you deal with one of the few retailers that does do customer service in-store very well, Nordstrom was the example, it's really interesting. Those are the two extremes, and arguably they're the exceptions.
Well, you know, every brand has a set of brand expectations that go along with it, right? And so Nordstrom has set up a particular brand expectation. Amazon has as well. You might argue that because they're an online-only retailer and they're a new retailer and the experience is evolving and still very new, that people's sensibilities may be less harsh than they are in an in-store environment where, you know, they've been fed up for years about the service that they may or may not be getting in particular stores. And so they may be a little more lenient. But Amazon has also built quite a bit of its reputation based on its ability to service its customers. And so it doesn't entirely surprise me that perhaps on a consistency basis and a breadth basis that they might rank the highest.
Well, I think the interesting thing about this study is really it brings to numbers or brings to light things that, you know, I think everybody knew in the first place, that your brand can be affected by any channel in which it's offered, regardless of whether internally you keep things separate between your catalog operation and another company runs your online operations. When they see the brand being Macy's, that affects Macy's stores. I don't think there's any surprise there whatsoever. I think what this study brought out is that there is a quantifiable number to the cost of screwing up online, and that there's an actual number of the number of consumers that do get mad and don't shop at the stores as a result. So I think those are the two big issues that came out in the study. But the general conclusion is like, well, of course, that's happening. So of course consumers would look at it that way. We don't look at anything differently just because it's one channel or another.
Well, I mean, it goes back to this very core question of our retailers. Everyone's talking about customer centricity, but do retailers really understand what their customers want? And I think that's a really fair kind of question. And so far, the answer appears to be, for the most part, no.
It shows that the web is still in its infancy from the perspective of retailers.
Customers, when they go to a particular merchant's website, really see it as a merchant's experience, that the merchant is responsible for everything that happens there. Order fulfillment, credit card processing, inventory management, all of that. And the truth is, most of that stuff is farmed out to third parties that the customer has no idea about and that the merchant may not have a lot of control over.
Going up Sears catalog when that was in existence, or JCPenney catalog, it might have been outsourced, but the customer's expectation was always that that was Sears.
And that's what the online retailers want to present. The customers don't know, and frankly, they really don't care.
And the merchants don't want, the merchants want to be the ones to have the direct relationship with the customer.
Right.
What I find amazing is if I'm going to buy a pair of socks, what I really want is a pair of socks, not necessarily a pair of socks at Bloomingdale's. And so they understand that it's much harder to maintain a brand image online when somebody's buying a product as opposed to shopping at a store.